Hey y'all, it's Oh Snapped.
Hey.
Season 1, Episode 6.
We're doing it.
We're doing it. This one is about a woman named Leanne Rydell. Barf.
Yeah. We, on the other show that we have, Killer Queens, talk about women that can get men to do kind of anything that they want. And we think that she kind of falls under this a little bit. We call that beer-flavored nipples.
We sure do, yeah.
And we think that she's got a case of it.
Yeah, this is a clear case of beer-flavored nipples. So.
You want to launch right into it?
Let's do it.
Cool.
She had three kids and a gorgeous home.
It was on the water. It was a beautiful, beautiful home.
And a hunky bodybuilder husband.
Paul was about 6'4", 285 pounds of solid muscle.
With money in the bank.
He had money stashed away, a lot of cash from his business.
It was the perfect Long Island love story until a shocking murder.
Came in through the back door, was stumbling and shot, fell to the ground.
Revealed a riveting tale of sex, money, and a tragic case of mistaken identity. Next on Snapped.
She grew up on Long Island, New York, and typical middle-class kid. Her dad, David, said that she was born in December of 1967. And they were like that typical Long Island family. Husband, wife, she was the second of four children. Everything was pretty normal. But when she was 11, her parents split up. We hear from a reporter for the New York Post. And we feel like we have to frame like the time that this was recorded, right?
Yes. So it came out in 2004.
Yeah. So the case would have been wrapped up before that, obviously.
Totally.
So early 2000s. And she says
her mother moved to Florida to live with her gay lover and left Leanne to be raised by her father.
She uses the term gay lover like a lot. And
it can't just be her lover, her partner, her girlfriend, whoever. Yeah. She really drives home that it was the gay lover.
Yeah. So we're going to credit that to the time. And
as cringy as it is.
Yeah. I hope that now that time has passed, maybe that's not the way that she talks about it anymore.
Totally.
Dr. Diana Falkenbach, a forensic psychologist, said, and this, like, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Divorce is really hard on kids, and a lot of parents don't talk about what's going on to their kids, so there's a lot of confusion. And you can totally see how, like, if you grow up in a heterosexual household, when a parent leaves with somebody, you know, like her mom left with another woman, that would be confusing.
100%. And I do feel like nowadays we have so many resources to be able to go to figure out how to talk to children, because they don't need all of the information like an adult would. They can't handle that and they don't understand it. So you would need to kind of put it in children, like terms that children would understand. But this was in, if she was 11, then this was 1978.
Yeah. Yeah. So
resources were there.
Yeah. And I'm sure it was very like, we just don't talk about it.
Oh, right.
And divorce in general, like, we're just not going to talk about it. I mean, I don't know specifically, her dad and mom don't say anything about it specifically. Like, yeah, we talked about it a lot or anything like that. But I could see them just being like,
this is life now. We're moving on.
Yeah. It's like, we don't talk about it in the house.
Absolutely. And that takes a toll on anybody.
Sure. And kids naturally put the blame on themselves. If I had, you know, done something different, if I got better grades, if, you know, what did I do? And the fact that she moved so far away, that's hard. It's like, you know, why do you not want to be around me?
Absolutely. And it's, again, not like today where you could Skype, FaceTime, all these things. You would have to have the call. I don't know how often they would call each other. But yeah, it's just a completely different situation.
Totally. Leanne had some rough teen years and she made some mistakes. Leanne's mom, Pat, said that as she went towards teenage, she had a rough time and her acting out was pretty tough. Part of that acting out resulted in a failed marriage early on, and she had a son at 19 named Christopher, and she raised him by herself. So, I mean, she definitely started out kind of young, but it seemed like she really, like, pulled it together, you know? I mean, she was raising him and
she was a kid herself raising a child.
Right, and everybody kind of, you know, they made it sound like she was a great mom, you know?
Yes. Jay Saulpeter, he was a private investigator. He said she was a wonderful parent, very caring, nurturing mother. She cares about her children. And I don't think that there's a question about that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But Leanne had boyfriends here and there, but nothing serious. And then in the mid-90s, she started working out at a local gym. And that gym would change her life forever.
Sure would, because now she's surrounded by hunky dudes with big muscles.
Can I be surrounded by hunky dudes with big muscles?
If you ever worked out, maybe.
True.
That's the first step.
And I flat out refuse to do that.
Sure, yeah. So in June of 98, she met the hunk of her dreams, Paul Riedel, who was an imposing giant with the heart of a child. Leanne's mom, Pat, said that he was the first muscle-bound man that she'd ever been with, and he took up, like, the entire doorway. He was huge.
I love that, like, all of the terms, because it's obvious that Paul was very into working out, but, like, everybody that talks about him, the terms that they use, it's like, he was as big as a doorway. He was a giant. He was a muscle-bound man.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think about Sister Act, which is, it's a Motown song, but still, like, no muscle-bound man could take my hand from, you know, it's like.
Yeah.
No
muscle-bound man could take my hand from my God, my God. No handsome face could ever take the place of my God, my God, my God.
He may not be a movie star, but when it comes to being happy,
we are.
He's not a man today who could take me away from my God.
When I think of Sister Act, I think of the "He wore an itsy bitsy teeny."
Stop in the name. Well, that was part. It was part of that.
Yeah, it was. It was that whole like mashup thing montage or whatever. Kind of. Oh yeah, montage. But they also said that he was like made her feel really good about herself. He was very like warm and fuzzy and cuddly. He was like a teddy bear kind of thing.
Sure, like one of those giant teddy bears that you win at a carnival.
Yeah, like a gentle giant. And Leanne's stepmother, Kathy, said that they were really excited when she got engaged to Paul. Like, they thought, you know, this is a great match.
Because they got engaged very quickly.
Very quickly.
And then subsequently got married very quickly.
Yeah, so if they met in June of 1998, if you typed this right...
I did.
And I'm not saying you've typed things wrong.
I feel like the shots have been fired, but I did type it correctly.
It says July of 98 was perfect. And I just, yeah, that's a month.
Yeah.
That's 1 month.
One whole month.
So friends said the wedding was great. Like Paul wanted the best of the best and he had everything, including his wife. She was the best. They had a beautiful church. They had a reception in a great catering hall. And they were happy. She said Leanne was super happy. And the pictures, they look, you know, genuinely happy. We've seen some wedding pictures that were not so happy.
Definitely.
Yeah.
These were very happy and very 90s.
Oh, they were very 90s. It was like so 90s. Love it.
Love it. Paul's best man at the wedding was his best friend, Alex Algieri. Peter Casserly, he was a member of a Dolphin Fitness Club, said that everyone knew Alex and everyone loved him. He was just the kind of guy that you could not help but like, much like Torella.
Oh.
She's the kind of man that everyone loves.
It's my mustache, really, and my beard.
It's warm and it's welcoming.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. So Steve Constantino, he was the attorney for Paul Riedel, he said that they drove motorcycles together. They had the same car. They were about as close as two friends could possibly be. They did everything together. They even went into business together. So they are like literally two peas in a pod. Like how you see sometimes, like I did this a lot in, I guess, middle school, high school. You find like that girlfriend that you're like obsessed with and you love them. And it's like kind of single white female, but it's not really.
Right.
You just like them. You get everything together. That was Paul and Alex. They were like BFFs.
They looked so similar too. They had the same like build. Oh, their hair was the same color. Like,
yeah, I'm sure they used the same kind of hair gel.
Oh, I'm sure they did. They probably shared a locker at the gym. You know what I mean? It's like, we're going to use the same gel. We got the same body spray. Like, why don't we just call a spade a spade and share a locker?
Definitely. I mean, it's just more economical that way.
Totally.
So their business was the Dolphin Fitness Club. And they opened this gym to tailor it to around-the-clock weightlifters like themselves. So their thought was, if you wanted to go to the gym after you get off work, it'll be open. If you can't sleep or you just get done at the club and you need to go to the gym.
Or like if you work third shift or like, you know, whatever, second shift. Like,
yeah. If you want to go before work and you work really early, it'll always be open.
For sure.
And back then, that wasn't as common as it is now, probably.
Right. So. Yeah. Yeah. It was kind of like a different thing up there at that time.
Innovative.
Totally. And I mean, at that point, it just looked like everything was falling into place. Leanne and Paul were married. They had a successful business. And then Leanne got pregnant. But having everything you want takes a toll, and Paul was feeling the strain. The long hours a 24-hour gym demanded eventually led Paul to try cocaine. And he was using crack cocaine, and Leanne was literally like following him around to crack houses trying to find him 6, 8, 9 months pregnant.
Can you imagine?
No. That would be like scary and like sad and just so many things, you know?
Yeah, there's a lot going on there.
And you're like exhausted being pregnant.
Yeah. And I don't think that it would be fair to blame him because addiction is real and it's something that you cannot, you know, even if you want to get out of it or you don't want, I don't think anybody wants to be an addict.
Right. Yeah. That you, yeah.
But it's something that is so hard to get on top of.
Yeah. Because once you get to that point, it's like you honestly just keep doing it so that you don't have to come down or go through withdrawals or whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm sure that it's like that with cocaine. I've never.
Right. And maybe he was, you know, maybe it was one of those things where he like, he viewed himself as this idealized version of himself because look at how much I can get done when I do with this. Look at, you know.
Yeah. Like, I mean, yeah, I'm sure he, like, if they were the only two, he and Alex are the only two running it really. Are they each one of them there at all times? That's you. I mean, you'd both be working 7 days a week and working 12 hours a day.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know what their schedule was like, but it, I mean, later we get into it slightly, but I don't know how much they were working, but that's a lot. You know, it's not a 40 hour a week business. So, yeah, you're going to be trying to stay awake.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, I mean, you talked about that one case on intervention where there was a housewife who was literally just trying to keep up with it all and got started on meth.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, you know.
Yeah, and she was, I mean, she didn't do it because I think that unfortunately sometimes, and especially like throughout history, that has changed. But you think about like what a drug addict looks like to you. And mm-hmm. so you think about like some vagrant, transient person that, you know, sometimes maybe let's just go with, it's a visual, stay with me here. The live action Dennis the Menace.
I was going to say that.
Christopher Lloyd.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
Right?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people, yeah, picture or, yeah, think about. But it literally touches every socioeconomic group,
totally.
You know.
It could be you or it could be your spouse. It could be your neighbor. You mm-hmm. never know.
Yeah. People struggle, man. There's a lot. There's anxiety. There's pressure. There's all kinds of things. And sometimes you just, you know, find something and it feels like it keeps you going.
Absolutely.
Dr. Jennifer Spring, a forensic psychologist, said that usually in a drug addicted household, the addict makes apologies for their behavior, like, I'll never do it again. I'm going to stop. I'm sorry. I promise. Please give me another chance. And the spouse will feel sorry for them and they give them another chance because they love that person. And Leanne was probably also hoping that the new baby would kind of jolt Paul into growing up and getting himself together.
It's a very common belief that a child is going to improve the relationship or it's going to bring something to the relationship that the relationship didn't have. You know, people end up getting married and they think it's all wonderful and then it seems to kind of come apart or not work as well. And the hope is, you know, we bring a baby into this. This is really going to fix that.
In Leanne's case, it actually seemed like it worked in the beginning.
Right. Lisa Pulitzer said that Paul was very excited to have his own child, and he described it as a turning point in his life.
Yes.
And I'm sure that he genuinely felt that way.
Right. Yeah.
But old habits die hard, and addiction is a disease. It mm-hmm. is real.
Yeah.
And Paul actually asked his best friend, Alex, a.k.a. his BFF twin, mm-hmm. To be Nicholas's godfather. But the thrill of having a son wasn't enough to get Paul off of cocaine, unfortunately.
Yeah. Leanne would find, like, she found syringes, she found vials in the house, and she was terrified that Nicholas was going to prick himself with a needle.
And that's a very valid and legitimate fear.
Absolutely. Yeah, you don't know what's going to happen with mm-hmm. that. In July of 2000, she had finally had enough. So Paul comes home one night from work and everything is gone. Leanne's gone. His son is gone. His stepson is gone. Pretty much all the furniture is gone. Like, she cleaned the place out.
That's got to be, because I've thought about this for a second. Like, I'm sure that for Leanne, she didn't know what else she could do. And maybe that was like the easiest way mm-hmm. for her to get out of it.
Yeah.
Because she didn't have to have a conversation with him pleading and being,
right,
I'll fix it. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry.
And then her like going back again, like doing the merry-go-round again.
Absolutely. But I do feel for Paul because it's got to be a really sad and lonely place to be. You get home and it's just everything's gone.
Yeah, you've lost everything.
Mm-hmm.
She moved to Florida with her mother.
And her mother's gay lover.
Yeah.
Bears repeating.
Right. Yeah, I'm pretty sure they said that. But this woke Paul up. He was terrified. And Leanne didn't want Nicholas to grow up without a father, so they started working on it. And it took 4 months, but they ended up getting back together. And in December, Leanne and her two boys left Florida and moved back home to Long Island. And it seemed like they beat the odds. Like, okay, we did this. Paul got clean and, you know, we're making it work.
But a terrible tragedy would rip them apart again. And this time, the separation would be for life.
That's ominous.
It is. I can hear the narrator.
Oh, yes. January 2001, on a Wednesday night, behind Paul's gym in Amityville, about 7:20, 7:25, it was dark. And the area behind the Dolphin gym wasn't really well lit. So this was Paul's night off, and his best friend Alex was working. There was an aerobics class going, and they wanted a CD that he had in his car. I'm assuming it's, what's that guy's name? Steve Winwood?
Oh, sure. Or like a Jock Jams would be great.
One of those two, yeah.
CNC Dance Factory or whatever.
CNC Dance Factory, yeah. I was thinking Steve Winwood just because it's not really what you would work out to in aerobics, but Dennis always made sure to do that, and It's Always Sunny.
It works. Or it was Rick Astley. Forever and
oh, ever. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You've got some options.
For sure. We don't learn what the CD is, no, okay? So we have to use our imagination. But he goes out to get the CD, and some guy jumps out of a vehicle that was parked nearby. And so Alex is going into, like, the passenger side door of his car. This guy jumps out, and he shoots Alex 3 or 4 times in the face and head. Alex makes it to the back door. He's like stumbling over to the door and he mumbles, I've been shot. And then he falls to the ground.
You know that Alex had to have been running on just pure like muscle memory and adrenaline.
Yeah.
Like, how can you survive even that long?
I know. That's amazing.
Crazy.
Oh my gosh. Poor guy. By the time the EMTs got Alex to the hospital, he had passed away. And the murder, it didn't make sense because who would want Alex dead? It just didn't make sense.
No. Salvatore Algeri, Alex's father, said that he was a great person. He had a joy about life. And it's just, I cannot even imagine the trauma that family went through.
Oh my gosh, right? It's like, your son goes to work, normal night, he's at the gym, no enemies, no high-risk behaviors that he was, you know.
No.
Involved in, and he gets shot and killed. It's like, what happened? Was somebody trying to rob him? Like, what happened?
Completely out of the blue.
Yeah. But there were a lot of people that didn't like Paul. So, because it just didn't make sense. Like, maybe somebody thought Alex was Paul. Because they
look exactly the same.
Yeah, they were two peas in a pod. Like, but they worked opposite shifts. So maybe somebody thought it was Paul working and it wasn't. And again, that place wasn't like well lit. So,
and they had the same car.
Yeah, they had the same exact car.
Same car.
Yeah. So you can see where there would be some confusion. The private investigator said that there were drug people that weren't happy with Paul. there were organized crime people that weren't happy with Paul. They don't go into that. I mean, I get the drug people, right? Because he was on drugs for a long time. I don't know his tie to organized crime, so I'm not really sure what that's about.
And I mean, I guess this says a lot about how we are, who we are, as little country bumpkins that don't know anything about anything. How would you even reach out to an organized crime person?
Maybe like on Craigslist?
Maybe. Are there organized crime groups on Facebook?
Yeah, you could join a Facebook group.
Okay.
Something like that. I don't know. Are they in the phone book? I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, he apparently had some ties to that too. So they're like, you know, it would just make a lot more sense for Paul to have been the target. And Leanne was terrified because she's like, what if the baby would have been in the car? What if I had been in the car too? Like, there's something going on here. We need to get out of here. So she convinced Paul to move the family back to Florida for good.
Yes. And in February of 2001, Leanne, Paul, and the two kids, so Christopher and Nicholas, they move back to the Sunshine State. Mary Hanrahan said, I called down there and Paul told me all about the house they were going to build. So I thought everything was going really well for them.
Mm-hmm. So back in New York, police are working Alex's case and they've pretty much got nothing. They have no leads. Months go by. Paul's still trying to run the gym from Florida. And then he goes on a business trip to New York and he hears a pretty vicious rumor. A relative tells Paul that every time Paul leaves Florida to go to New York on business, some guy named Rocco goes to their apartment in Florida.
So he's like hanging out with Leanne.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some dude going to your apartment every time you're gone. And Paul's like, absolutely not. Leanne would never do that. She would never be unfaithful to me, especially since she just announced that she was pregnant again. So he's like, no, we're having a second kid. Like, we're super happy. Everything's going really great. We're building a house, you know? Like, everything is looking up here.
Then in November of 2011, cops in Long Island arrested a drug dealer named Michael Hubbard. And in an interrogation room, Hubbard gave police some interesting information. He said that he knew something about a murder in hopes of getting a better deal for himself.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have we heard about that?
Yeah, it's always like, that's so hard because there are times that these tidbits of information are genuine and then there's a lot of times where they're not, so.
Yeah, and you would hope that, because, I mean, if somebody that has legit information needs to come forward and help solve a case, like if you have any kind of moral compass, you would do that. But sometimes people do it for their own personal gain.
Yeah.
And that's what we see a lot.
A lot.
He claimed that a couple of bodybuilders in Florida with underworld connections.
They use underworld so many times in this episode.
I know. And it's like, I don't understand it because the only time that I've ever heard about the term underworld or like used the term underworld was watching the great classic Disney's Hercules, because Hades is the god of the underworld.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like these guys are right there with Hades.
Right? We'll just nickname them Pain and Panic from Hercules.
Okay, perfect.
But these two men with underworld connections, Scott Padgett and Ralph Rocco Salerno,
uh-oh,
were involved with Alex's murder. Now, have we heard the name Rocco before?
You know what? No, but yes, we have. Because,
okay.
Yeah, he's the one hanging out at Leanne's apartment. So that's a direct connection from Florida to New York.
Mm-hmm.
That'd be pretty wild. Now, if Rocco, like, worked out at the Dolphin Gym or something, that would be one thing.
Totally.
Or knew somebody else that knew Paul and Alex, but no, just Leanne. So,
right.
Definitely interesting information. And police are like, okay, well, we need to pick them up and talk to them. So, Scott Padgett threw Rocco right under the bus. He's like, it was totally all his fault.
I'm sure that police were like, excuse me, Mr. Padgett, do you know anything about Rocco? And he's like, spilled the beans. He's like, look, I held out as long as I could. Like, I don't, yeah. I tried.
They were on me, man. I don't know what to do. Rocco said that he'd been having an affair with Leanne since the first time that she moved to Florida. And Leanne's mother had introduced them to protect Leanne from Paul when he came down to Florida to bring Nicholas back to New York when he had visitation. So Rocco said that he had gone to New York to kill Paul, not Alex.
But in the darkness of the alley, well, one muscle-bound hunk looks pretty much like the next.
All right. They look super similar. They drove the same car. And he also said that he, not Paul, was the father of Leanne's new baby.
Ugh. That information. Like, that's, I don't know.
That's tough to take.
I can't get on board with an affair. I can't get on board with a murder. It's just like salt in the wound.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, because Paul's thinking like, okay, we're building this house for our children together. Yeah, it's just sad.
It's terrible.
Also, oh, my wife tried to have me killed. That's a tough one.
Exactly.
So the police talked to Leanne and she admits to the affair because they're like, look, Rocco already told us about the affair. And Pat said when she spoke to the police, she was really candid about the fact that Zachary was in fact Rocco's baby, but she was adamant that she had nothing to do with Alex's murder.
And that's something that is really interesting because then you start to maybe believe like, well, if she's going to be honest about something that's really not a good look for her,
mm-hmm.
why would she lie about this other thing that's not
right?
A good
because
look for
the affair could go to motive. So many people, we see it in so many cases, they will lie about an affair
mm-hmm.
because they don't want the police to think they have a reason to want to kill their spouse or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like you said, she was honest about that. So. Yeah. Yeah, maybe she's telling the truth. David Leanne's father said,
I think he saw her as a meal ticket and that it looked like she was going to reconcile with Paul. He saw his opportunity was going out the window and he figured, you know what? I'm going to get rid of this guy before they get together.
How was Leanne a meal ticket, though?
That's what I don't understand. Like, maybe if Paul was out of the picture, she would get ownership of the gym because Alex is, well... But no, because Alex would, in that scenario, Alex still would have been there.
Unless it's one of those things where, so let's say Alex is still part of the gym, and then Leanne is now inheriting this part of the gym that would have been Paul's.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, I want to get out of it. Do you want to buy me out?
Right, yeah.
And then
yeah.
There's that settlement. Because if they were to divorce, she would have gotten a fraction of that.
Yeah, true. Yeah, because otherwise, I don't know that she was in business with him, so it wasn't like she had another successful career or whatever.
Right, it didn't seem like her
together.
She came from a family of major wealth or anything like that.
No, yeah. So, in March of 2003, Leanne was arrested for the murder of Alex Algieri. And the narrator says the next time the proud parents of Zachary would be together, it'd be in court. They'd be co-defendants in a murder trial.
I live for the narrator.
She's so sassy.
So sassy.
She's got sass mouth.
She's like the baby on America's Sweethearts. Like, she's looking at you and she's judging you.
Oh, she is. In March of 2004, Leanne Riedel and Rocco Salerno were facing charges of first-degree murder, second-degree murder, and conspiracy in the death of Alex Algieri. In a strange move, the state decided to try them at the same time, but with two separate juries. So there's two jury boxes, two defense tables.
I just don't get it.
Don't
get it.
It worked, though.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it just seems like a lot of red tape kind of thing.
Yeah.
The prosecution said that Leanne was cunning and manipulative. That's where we get the beer flavor nipples.
Sure.
And hired her boyfriend to kill her husband. But through a tragic case of mistaken identity, Rocco killed the wrong man.
Ugh.
It's so infuriating. It's senseless. Like, can you imagine Alex's family sitting through this trial and being like, are you kidding me? You got the wrong person?
Like, not that anybody deserved to die, obviously, but like,
but Alex, that's why my son is dead?
Exactly. Because you guys got the wrong person.
Yeah. If you're going to kill somebody, can you not at least like, double check? It's kind of a big deal.
You could even like call out their name.
Yeah. Anything.
Mm-hmm.
They started calling witnesses and Tori, I don't want to tell you this, but they were underworld types of people.
Oh my goodness. More of these kinds of guys.
Mm-hmm. Underworld. And all they want to do is save their own butts.
Hold on to your butts.
Yeah. But not everyone who took the stand was on a butt-saving mission.
It's like, during these episodes, it's like some stuff. I'm like, I see what you did there and I get it, but it's also hilarious.
Yeah. It's like, where is this even coming from?
Why are we still talking about butts?
Yeah. So many butts. Leanne's mother's former lover, they're no longer together. Yeah. Is a tough-talking New Yorker named Elizabeth Russo, and she admitted that she introduced Leanne to Rocco to put the screws to Paul.
If you guys, if anybody out there has heard of that phrase and want to just shed some light, I get it from context clues, but like, have you heard this phrase?
Yeah, I've never heard this phrase.
Put the screws to Paul.
Yeah. But she said that Paul needed his legs broken.
That's heavy. A clearer picture.
That is a clearer picture. Yeah. I mean, I've been like mad at like my friends, you know, boyfriends or whatever, but I've never been like, you need your legs broken. That's pretty significant.
Right?
But she said that she's from Mulberry Street in Manhattan, and she kind of talked like she knew Gotti, so she was kind of a toughie. That's what Pat said about her. So,
I love that description of her.
Yeah. Prosecutors said that after Leanne and Paul moved back to Long Island, Rocco rented a car and drove up to New York under strict instructions from Leanne. But the defense said, hang on just a second. There's some discrepancies here.
Mm-hmm.
So the defense attorney for Leanne, Bruce Barquette, said, police said that Rocco rented a van through Enterprise Rent-A-Car with a credit card from a certain individual. He doesn't say who the individual is. Leanne, is that who he's talking about? There's no record of that individual's or on that individual's credit card or any record from Enterprise about renting a car to Rocco or Leanne or anyone around that time.
You know, saying it out loud is different than trying to type that sentence or that whole excerpt out, because I was like, wait, it's so wordy. Like, there's individuals and the credit cards and any individual or anyone around that, you know, it's like.
Yeah. And he's using words. Yeah. Like an individual, like who's the individual? And do you mean like they said Enterprise, but they meant Alamo? Like,
right.
did they check? Is there a record in another rental company? And you're just saying, well, you got the rental company wrong.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like splitting hairs in a weird way.
Yeah. And of course he says, Leanne's not the mastermind. And he says the way that he knows that is because they went up to the gym on a Wednesday night and Leanne knew that that was Paul's night off. So why would anybody send him there on a Wednesday night knowing that Paul's not even going to be there?
So while I don't agree with some of the things that he's saying about the defense and like why she wasn't part of this, I can kind of understand that though, because why would someone who knew someone's schedule, unless it changed out of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and it was like, Alex really needs to be there because he needs the next night off or whatever.
Yeah.
Why would somebody send a killer up there, like a murder for hire person up there, to kill someone on their known night off?
Yeah. Like, I wish they went into a little more detail about that, too, because I would like to know, yeah, was it like a last minute change? Was it that Paul had every Wednesday night off without fail? It was always that way? Or did it change from week to week? Like, did she just get his schedule wrong? You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But they don't go into it. So we don't know if his night off was always without fail Wednesday night. That definitely is a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Then the prosecution played their ace in the hole. The key witness against Leanne was Michael Paglianti. He was a convicted drug dealer and gave what he claimed was an eyewitness account of Leanne plotting with Rocco to kill Paul. And he said that Leanne's reaction to Alex's wake was very interesting because she's basically calling out Rocco for shooting the wrong person.
After the man who put the bullets into Alex's face and head arrived back in Florida, Leanne's statement was, you stupid ass, you killed the wrong guy. How do you think I felt at his wake? Looking into his girlfriend's eyes, saying that I'm sorry, knowing that I'm the one responsible for his murder.
I mean, I'm sure she knew Alex's girlfriend super well.
Mm-hmm.
I can't, yeah. Like, how do you live with yourself like that? My gosh.
No idea.
They couldn't be sure, but the defense claimed it wasn't enough to send Leanne to prison. Bruce Barquette said there wasn't a shred of physical evidence connecting her to the crime. There wasn't a shred of objective evidence connecting her to the crime. There wasn't scientific evidence, no DNA, no ballistics, no fingerprints, no nothing. The only way she's connected is by testimonies of drug dealers, murderers, thieves, and liars. That is, if that's true, that's a good point.
Very.
Because it's not like it's not like they would have been at that time, you know, texting back and forth about it or whatever. Because a lot of times you'll find stupid idiots texting each other like, hey, you're going to kill him today. Like, you know,
exactly. Is it done?
Yeah. Maybe they emailed back and forth. I mean, I'm sure they talked on the phone.
Yeah.
But, you know, I don't
know. Nothing concrete was leading back to Leanne anyway.
Yeah. I wonder, though, if they did have phone records, if Rocco called. But it would have been from a payphone or something, so it would have been really hard to know. But from New York, a call to her in Florida, that would be
something.
A connection, like she knew he was up there or something. But it probably would have been a payphone, and that would have been hard to say for sure that it was even Rocco.
Absolutely, yeah.
So the trial is coming to a close. It looks like it could go either way for Leanne. There was no irrefutable evidence connecting her to the murder, but there was lots and lots of testimony putting her at the head of the plot. But why would she want Paul dead? The prosecution said that they had an answer, and it was greed, which is like 99% of the time.
Well, yeah, any woman that ever is in...
like spouse murders, I say.
Sure, yeah. Why they're implicated in a murder is 99% of the time greed.
Yeah. They allege that Leanne wanted Paul out of the picture to obviously capitalize on his wealth. And Leanne's attorney's closing argument was that Rocco went to New York out of jealousy, and unfortunately, he had killed the wrong man. So Rocco's jury agreed. It just took him 4 hours to come back with a guilty verdict for first-degree murder. Leanne's jury took a lot longer. They kind of seemed like they were having trouble coming to a verdict. And it took them 4 days of deliberation, but they did come back and find her just as guilty as Rocco. And Dr. Falkenbach said that for the jury to see Leanne and Rocco together in court was probably what did it. I also feel like, because this is really similar to like the Elena Collegius case, where her defense acknowledged in the Elena Collegius case that Boris was killed in the basement. They're like, yeah, that's where he died. But it wasn't Elena that had anything to do with it. It was just Messiah. Like, the defense never brought up any of the other reasons that somebody might have wanted Paul dead. Mm-hmm. They just kind of gave in to that. When you see the connection is Leanne and they don't do anything to refute that?
Yeah, you can only see that the connection is Leanne, and then it's that kind of like nail in the coffin.
Yeah, thing. It just kind of, it didn't really give him anything else to work with. I don't know. Yeah. Like, that you, because you would think if they tried him together, but I mean, Rocco did already confess, but you'd think they would try to maybe point somewhere else or give a little bit more of other reasons, or I don't know. It seemed like that being the connection, like since Leanne was the only connection between the two, it's going to be very difficult to get a jury to think that she didn't have anything to do with it.
Right. And I think it was very smart on the state's side to try them together, because mm-hmm. look at what they've done with that.
Yeah.
But
because if they tried them separately, who knows if they would have known that Rocco confessed? Who knows? And I don't know what all the jury got to sit in for, but there would just be a lot of testimony that they probably wouldn't have been able to get in for just Leanne's trial. So having the information about Rocco there too was, I think, a big help for them.
Yes. Leanne is presently serving her time in the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility in New York. She, of course, appealed her conviction. Rocco Salerno is currently serving life without parole in Attica Correctional Facility in New York. Leanne and Rocco's son, Zachary, is with Leanne's sister on Long Island, and Nicholas now lives with Paul. And Nicholas has no contact with his mother. I feel like, of course, Alex is the victim in this, but those kids are too. Like,
yeah.
Zachary has to go without both parents, because mm-hmm. both parents are in jail.
Yep.
Nicholas is without one parent.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have Alex, of course. It's so senseless. It is so sad. It just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, and so many people, you know, there's always that ripple effect. And it's, you know, anytime one person is murdered, there's so many people that are affected by that. And then in this case, it's like, they meant to kill Paul. So that would have already been, you know, all these people that get affected by it. Alex himself would have been affected because that's his best friend. Mm-hmm. But now that they accidentally killed Alex, Now, Alex's whole family, all of his friends, all of his circle of people, you know, it's like...
Well, and you got to think, too, what is Paul living with the guilt in that...
Oh, my gosh, I'm sure. Yeah. Poor guy.
It's just so sad.
Mm-hmm. It's really sad. So, that's episode 6, y'all.
Yuck.
She's a butt munch. And I'm sorry to say it.
Strong words.
Sorry to say it. Maybe I'm hormonal. I don't know.
My goodness.
But I feel like she's a butt munch. That's
for
sure.
Well, she is.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for listening. We have, of course, other episodes on this. This is our 6th episode. We've got 5 other ones. If you haven't listened to any of those, feel free to go and listen to them.
Yeah. And check out our other podcast, Killer Queens. We've got lots of stuff there.
If you feel so inclined, leave us a review.
Oh my God, that would be amazing.
It would be so fun.
Yeah.
But thank you so much thank you always for listening. And we hope to catch you on the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.